Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. We are here with the Chief Executive Officer of Tufton Oceanic, Marcus Machin. Marcus, welcome back to Eye on Careers.
Thank you. Thank you, Shane.
It's a pleasure to have you on, and we were just exploring the importance of getting a good education, getting that as a bedrock. Not a necessity, but it definitely adds a little wind in your sails. And so then how do you, you know, what's the career progression? How do you then drift into this niche area of marine finance?
Well, I was very lucky in terms of the institutions I worked for. You mentioned earlier that I moved from a large bank, an international bank, to smaller institutions in London. And the one that I worked for, Henry Ansbacher and Company, was at that time heavily involved in shipping and ship finance. And it was a niche market.
How did you get your job into a niche? You had, as they say in the Middle East, a little wasta play there.
There was a bit. I knew the managing director of the bank because I used to have a holiday job where I saw him at a pheasant shoot.
A pheasant shoot.
so on the back of that qualification, being able to herd pheasants or whatever you do to them, I phoned him and I said, I'd like to come and work for your institution.
Ah, and he's like, yes, I've seen you wrangle pheasants. You will be excellent on my marine banking team.
Exactly. That was more or less how it went.
I mean, networking is so important. Having the right connections and making a conscious effort to develop your power network, I think, is a critical element.
Yeah, I mean, you can overdo it, but it is important who you know, who you mix with, and also how you mix with them, because one of the key things for a career in any area of finance is or should be your reputation and integrity.
And your ability to kill pheasants.
And your ability to kill pheasants. Usher them to an early death.
So that's basically it. I mean, I think people do need to take a chance on you in your career. They need to back you up. And then, so the opportunity was there, and then you capitalized on it.
Well, I did my best to do so. And one of the advantages of working in a small institution is that you'd see an awful lot very early on in your career. I was very fortunate in that. I spent time on transactions which, in a large bank, it would have taken me more than 10 years to get to see, in terms of the responsibility that I had.
But I think you started out in a big bank, get the bedrock, then you move into a smaller one. Sometimes people do it the reverse. The notorious dot-commer is also the antithesis to the theory that I'm presenting, is get your multinational experience 4 or 5 years out of the gates, then go into the smaller.
Well, there are substantial benefits to that, because the training that you'll get in a large organization is far more structured. So it does depend also on the type of person you are. If what you want is a firm structure and a defined progression, then a large organization may suit you extremely well. And what we say to people who join our company, and we in total in our 4 or 5 offices, we are 60 people, that if they're coming straight from higher education, which many of them will be, they have to recognize that there won't be anything that happens to them during their working day just because it's what always happens. There isn't a production line that they're joining. They're going to have to make things happen.
Have to be a maverick of sorts.
Well, not necessarily a maverick, because you've got to work very cooperatively with your colleagues, but you've got to be prepared to expend a lot of energy in what you do, and you've got to try to be creative in what you do, because our role in life is to be innovative in the financial markets and in the shipping markets. If we only do what was done last week, then our organization won't prosper.
won't survive. Yeah. I want to just touch on an interesting career management strategy now that I see emerging in your career, and that a lot of the research that we're looking at now says the generalist is not going to survive the 21st century. As we move forward, you know, things are becoming more segmented, they're becoming more specialized. As you grow your career, it's best for you to pick a niche and become a specialist in that area if you want to maximize your wealth creation opportunities.
Yes, I think that's probably right. And I think probably my career path would be a difficult one to follow now because, I mean, I have a literary background. I work in the finance sector, but I have a law degree, although my first 2 years at university was studying in English literature. And when I was first in Dubai, I was the CFO of a regional group. It was missed out on the little intro. But I was recruited there. The chap had been who owned the group was a former banking customer of mine. I'd known him for many years.
I thought he was a pheasantry hunter as well.
No? Down here, no. Yeah. Don't think he ever shot pheasants. But he'd been a banking customer since 1984, 1985. He just knew that I was the money guy. When I came down here to be the CFO of his group, which was quite a sizable group, after about a week, he came into my office and he said, "Marcus, you're not an accountant, are you?" And I said, "No, Tom, I never told you I was an accountant." He said, "Oh, it doesn't matter."
Great. So I think you have the two critical skills there in that. Communication, you know, so much of being a leader is communicating properly. And the second part, being a lawyer, the ability to sue people is also a fantastic option.
Well, it's not only the ability to sue people. I think the good thing about a legal training, and I think there are many people who should be grateful that I didn't continue on as a legal practitioner. But the good thing about a legal training is it does provide you with an organized structure to approaching any problem, and a framework in commercial matters anyway, for judging that problem in context. And I've always found it very helpful for that. I have found it a great deal more helpful than had I stayed reading English literature.
So now you're not just just a company man. You have a splash of an entrepreneurial spirit in there, founding Arab Capital. Tell us a little bit about when you made the jump to start your own business there.
Well, it was a time when the chap who I worked for here in Dubai was stepping back from the family group, and the family group was therefore changing, and I felt that I liked working for him. I didn't necessarily want to continue on in a family context which was not being led by him. And therefore, the question was what to do. And I cast around and applied for a number of jobs. The best one was, I think it was commercial director of the MCC, the Marylebone Cricket Club, back in London. And I was prepared to pay them to allow me to do that job. But I failed miserably to get very far in that. But it did seem in Dubai at that time there were real opportunities for growth. I liked living here. I had friends here. We built a life here. It seemed to me that there was the possibility to build on the relationships that I had, and my colleagues at Tufton I'd known for many years, and also do so in the context of a region that was growing fast at that time.
And so what happened? So you joined Tufton or you opened Arab Capital?
I set up Arab Capital, worked in partnership, which was never written down with Tufton. As all the best commercial agreements are never written down. We started providing advice and also finance for regional ship owners and operators. And then when it became possible to incorporate in the DIFC, we set up the DIFC business as a joint venture.
Okay, and you're part owner.
Yes, that's right.
Of the business.
Yeah.
And what's now the toughest thing about, you know, being at the helm of a business?
There are a variety of things. Mostly, it's good fun. I mean, it's one way of thinking of it to say, well, there's a lot of responsibility. There are responsibility to our employees, to our institutional investors, and to all our counterparties. But mostly, it's good fun. And if I had to design a role which I would find interesting, I couldn't do much of a better job than the one that's evolved with Tufton. The tough thing is to maintain a sense of responsibility, and in a volatile market like shipping, where between 2003 and 2008 the market was roaring ahead, and you could have believed that it would last forever, and you could have done a lot of stupid things. You could have overextended on investments. You could have given poor advice to our institutional partners. And the toughest thing is retaining that sense of perspective, I think, in the business, and what is possible in the business.
This is Marcus Machin, Chief Executive Officer of Tufton Oceanic. He'll be sharing his lessons learned on the road to the top.